Well, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world today. It's a very warm and loving welcome from Lisa Phillips here on the Spiritual and Irritable Show. Now, I say warm welcome because I've just been chatting to the guests that we've got on the show today and just complaining how cold it is here in Sydney, Australia. So, really got a good show lined up for you today. We have got the fabulous Dr. Lisa Love, who's going to spend some time with us today talking about her REACH program. So the REACH stands for Rapidly Evolving Agents for Changing Humanity. So I'm very excited to hear about this. Now, I'm sure many of you are very familiar with Lisa's work, but for those who may not be as familiar, Lisa's a very amazing person, as well as having a fabulous name, the same as mine. Now, she's a psychologist. She's a love and relationship law of attraction coach. She's a best-selling author of 5 books, a meditation teacher, a counselor, radio media personality, and of so many things. She's a former America Online teacher. Now, she's got over 30 years' experience as a counselor and a coach, and the owner of 6 psychology degrees, which is very, very impressive. So very, very warm welcome to you today, Dr. Lisa Love. Welcome to the Spiritual and Irritable Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's nice and warm here in California, the United States, but we're in our summer, you're in the winter. So it's wonderful to send some sunshine your way.
Oh, yes, please, if you wouldn't mind. Despite being English, I'm not very good with the cold weather, I must admit. So it's been a little bit of a running joke recently. I seem to have spent the last week while I've not been sort of in my normal job. I've been living most of the week in my pajamas while I'm working from home. So, Lisa, again, welcome so much for being with us on the show a little bit today. So can you just give our listeners today perhaps a little bit of a summary of the work that you do, and then we'll talk a little bit more about your REACH programs.
Well, I've always been interested in an understanding of where humanity can head so that we are more loving and caring about one another. So as far back as I was a teenager, I remember, and I was raised Christian, so at that time praying to Jesus to say, please help me become a more loving human being. And I was fascinated in trying to understand what love really means. And that quest continues. So in the last 5 years, my ideas about what love is and is not have been getting more and more solidified. After I was raised a Christian, I went to a traditional university and I got exposed to a lot of science, and I left that school being an agnostic. And then from there, I ended up expanding my understanding of metaphysics and different religions. And in 1989, after meditating 4 hours a day for 2 years, because I'd gotten into very serious practices of meditation, in 1989, I had a series of mystical and expanded states of consciousness and awareness that radically changed my view of the world. And from there, I already had a master's in marriage, family, child counseling, but I went on to get more degrees primarily to understand what it was that I had gone through and what other people were continuing to go through and will increasingly go through on this planet as we're getting ready to make a radical shift in consciousness. In 2000 to 2005, I ran, at the time, the third largest spirituality website on the internet called Soul to Spirit. And it was bringing spiritual leaders from all different faiths, non-faiths, even from around the world together to help create dialogue. And that continued to launch my work and has continued to focus my thoughts since then.
Wow. Amazing things that you've done. Absolutely amazing there. So tell us a little bit about your REACH programs. How were they born as such? And tell us a little bit more about those.
Well, the idea for REACH started back in the 1980s when I was involved in a particular meditation training. And similar to what I said, by 1989, I realized that we had to have a rapid shift coming on this planet if we were going to make it. Now, how did that come out in my mind? First of all, from the experience I had of unity consciousness, you know, we can say that we're all one, but in that altered state of consciousness, which is not from any drugs or anything, it was just from meditation practice, I went into a state where I literally felt like I was one with everything and everyone for a very prolonged period of time. The main focus of time was 6 weeks, and then it didn't really start dropping down intensively for a year. And that still remains with me, that the planet is a living, breathing entity that is conscious, that we live, move, and have our being inside. I mean, you go out in space and you look and you can tell we're all living within that planet. And that planet, it was like my mind, my consciousness was at one with the planet. I don't like to say cosmic consciousness because I think that's really, really to be an expand your consciousness to include an entire cosmos. I don't know. But planetary consciousness, that's what I felt I had. And so then I've been dealing ever since then with the riddle of, if we truly are all one and all interconnected, how do we live our lives? And that's where the REACH programs have continued to develop from, that question. And I've developed it along 7 different levels of where we need to become conscious, and that is my main mission in life, is to get the message out and to meet with like-minded people on each one of these levels to get the message up, because we must rapidly change. And this is before I was really aware of global warming and all that in the 1980s, but now most of us are aware of that. Not everybody believes it, but most people do, that we've got to do something about it.
Oh, you mentioned there just, you know, you had that feeling of oneness, that being totally connected to planetary consciousness. I mean, what was that like for you? What did that feel like?
Well, I'll describe one incident that happened. First of all, it was a very difficult state to remain in, even though I was there nonstop for 6 weeks. It's very difficult to live in the world in that space because you are so exquisitely sensitive to everything. So what I was going to mention is, for example, one day I was taking a bath, and a small ant, I realized, fell into the water and died. And it literally felt like I was dying with the ants.
Wow.
That sounds crazy. And I'm not in that state anymore. But it was so real and so painful, and to my awareness of what we were doing to the planet, same thing, exquisite joy because of the expanded sense of consciousness and awareness of who, quote, I really am and who we all really are, and yet at the same time, an exquisite pain about what are we doing to each other, because when I hurt you, I'm literally hurting me. Now, I'm not in that state anymore, and so I don't have that same level of intense joy and pain. I'm able to get along in the world as a human being better, but the awareness that that's who we all really are still remains.
Wow. I mean, personally, I just sort of want to talk about an experience I went through just a few weeks ago, because I've moved from, obviously, England to from a very small community-based place to living in a big city like Sydney. And I think I've seen there how much almost the lack of connection there seems to be, whether that's just living in a big city or whatever. But I see it happening more and more every day. I actually had somebody that I know collapse in the street the other week and watched 10 people walk past this person and didn't help. And, you know, I'm seeing more and more of these things happening as we seem to be becoming more disconnected, you know, with the people around us, and that lack of love towards other people on the planet. And yet, you know, you're discussing almost the opposite there of being so connected that you're feeling somebody else's pain rather than just sort of disconnecting and walking away from it. I mean, is that something you're finding, you know, where you live or things like that? So you find more and more sort of with the planet people have become...
It's interesting because the research they've done on happiness in at least 36 countries around the world, they've done it now 3 times. In the United States, we have Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness in our Declaration of Independence. And yet, we in the United States scored very low all 3 times in terms of happiness, and now they're calling it well-being. And why is that? Because the paradigm that we've used for happiness, which is the pursuit of wealth, as if wealth equals happiness, isn't working. it doesn't work. And in fact, it's causing more and more disconnection. Now, a certain level of wealth, and by the way, my PhD dissertation was on wealth and spirituality. So for 5 years, I was really studying this question. How do they go together or not? Well, a certain level of wealth, so that you have your basic needs met, definitely increases happiness. But beyond that, it does not. In fact, what it does is it's creating more and more disconnect because it's feeding the idea of the paradigm that who we are as human beings, and science in a way has studied this paradigm, are competitive, survival of the fittest, win-lose creatures. And yet more and more people like Lynn McTaggart, who wrote the book The Field, and the names are escaping me at the moment, but there's more and more people coming out saying, this is not the case. This is not really human nature. There's a great documentary that came out called I Am by a Hollywood producer who was the main person that discovered Jim Carrey. And he had a 17,000 square foot mansion. And it's interesting because one of the things that he went through was an accident that created a brain trauma, which created a series of altered states and a series of oneness, similar to what more and more people are having. And out of that, he reexamined his life and did this documentary, I Am, and gave up his 17,000 square foot mansion along with other mansions, and has begun at the end of his I Am movie to define this goal for excessive wealth as a form of mental insanity. This is the same kind of conclusion I reached doing my dissertation 2000-2005, and it's why when I wrote my book Beyond the Secret, which was about the law of attraction, and it took off on that book The Secret, but it said the greatest secret isn't knowing how to wish, it's knowing what to wish for. And increasingly humanity is wishing for the wrong things. They're wishing for the things that are causing more disconnection, more unhappiness, more of a feeling of loneliness, chronic loneliness. In the United States, we have more people jailed than we spend more money on jailing people than we do on education. So something is seriously wrong. Also, I want to say, I just looked it up for the show. April, Forbes magazine, April 2012, we now have 1,446 billionaires, and most of them have way more than $1 billion. If every single person that had a billion was helping a billion people, we have 7 billion people. Would we have the problems on the planet? No. So it's, we have all the resources we need to even help 7 billion people survive, but only if we change the idea of what it means to be human and we make it more about connection, more about relationship. I'll say one more thing and I'll pause. Why? Because in all the happiness and well-being research that they've done three times now, what was the number one thing that caused happiness? Long-lasting, loving relationships. And yet, in a lot of the developed countries, we're doing exactly the opposite. We're destroying long-lasting, loving relationships. That's why you see people walk by people on the streets and not care.
Oh, I mean, I see it more and more. I mean, I had just been out for a walk with a friend this morning, and we were just laughing because we're both from sort of small, caring communities, that not one person would say good morning. And this is a very affluent area. And yet, you know, I know probably an unfair comparison. In a small town where I'm originally from, where there is no money, people will stop and give you that time of day. And it's a very simplistic example there. But I see it more and more, particularly, you know, you're right, people are going for that wealth and they're actually becoming more disconnected. And actually, you know, I'm quite lucky. I've sort of traveled quite a lot around the world. And some of the more happy places where I've actually been greeted with a big smile and greeted with a heart open with love is from people who absolutely have nothing. Who, you know, I remember actually visiting Tanzania and speaking to one of the locals there who couldn't understand that I didn't know who my neighbors were. Because he said to me, you know, my neighbors are my people, they're my friends, I'm connected to them. If something goes wrong, we're there to help each other. Yet I live in a block where my neighbors don't even speak to me. You know, they won't even, if I say hello, they won't even say hello back. Again, you know, that's just my view, but I just see it more and more and agree totally about, you know, what you're saying there. The wealth doesn't necessarily bring us the happiness, nor does it bring us that connection with people.
It can if, and this is my philosophy, everybody that had $1 million was committed to helping a million people. Everybody that had $1 billion was committed to helping 1 billion people. Now, those 1,446 billionaires, most of them have way more than 1 million. Some of them have 30 billion or more. So if they were committed to helping 1 billion people, so it, what really is the problem, I realized, is the philosophy of how to live life that more and more people around the planet are subscribing to, which the scarcity of resources on the planet and the current economic crises are actually wonderful opportunities to get us out of mental insanity, because it is mentally insane to think that I need to make more and more money, at least in my country, so that I can work 24/7, so that, you know, I can have more and more stuff. But in the pursuit of stuff, I don't have time to raise my own kids, so I need money to have somebody else raise my kids. And the average relationship in the United States, John Gray, the Mars-Venus guy, has said is now lasting about 5 years. 5 years.
Good.
Why? Because we don't want to solve conflict. We don't want to learn how to really connect and communicate. We're just adopting the disposable ideology, which I hate to say it, primarily the United States has shipped out, which is just there's a bigger, better deal around the corner. Just, you know, throw it out and go get something new. And we're applying that to human beings. Throw them out. Go get something new. But what we're going to discover is we're getting to a point on the planet where we can't throw each other out. And the beautiful, beautiful thing about that is it's going to awaken the global heart. That's what is going to happen. And more people are having the experience you are having of oneness, I had of oneness. The person that did the I Am documentary, that's the Hollywood director that did Ace Ventura and Bruce Almighty, he's had an experience of oneness. More and more of us are waking up. And we're going to wake up very rapidly, very soon. Or within 50 years, I don't think we'll be extinct, but we will have a planet none of us will enjoy living on.
Yes. It's interesting, actually. There's a group here in Sydney called Wake Up Sydney, and it's all about that very same stuff. Come on, wake up. Yeah, we need to do something here. We need to change things. So you mentioned your REACH programs again. I understand there's 7 programs in your in the REACH. Can you tell us a little bit about these?
2 of them are fully developed and ready to launch on my website, though I'm looking forward to having more and more people join me, and so that's a call to, you know, I'd love to go to Sydney and Australia and New Zealand. I'd love to travel. I'd love people that will help get me out there and get the word out there and join me, just to let you all know. But that said, 2 of the programs are very developed, the Conscious Vision and the Conscious Love programs. Why? Because Conscious Vision means exactly the kinds of things I taught in my Beyond the Secret book, that we need to change our vision of what makes a happy, healthy, wonderful world. And it has to do, again, with saying, what is success? Long-lasting, loving relationships. You know, where we get to the end of our lives and we know that we were loved and that we loved. I'll share one more thing. For a while, I used to do medical social work where I would go into the homes of the elderly, ages about 70 to 103 was the oldest. And I would go into homes where people had literally a yacht in the backyard and lots of money, or, you know, in neighborhoods that were kind of scarier and homeless shelters. I mean, I ran the gamut. And everybody was sick, so nobody had good health. I was there to give them resources for their recovery and their care. And what was fascinating is I met some very wealthy people that were very happy and some that were horribly miserable. I met some poor people. One woman was the most joyful one I ever met, and she was in a homeless shelter, and some that were in those kinds of places scared to death. And it really, really impacted me. And I would always ask, what matters in the end? And it all boiled down to this. Were you loved, and did you love? Because if both were in play, doesn't matter whether you had a lot or little, you were happy. That's what defined whether those people were happy. The person with tons of money, with lots of, had done a tremendous amount of service in the San Diego area, was loved by lots and lots of people, an incredible human being. Despite his illness, he basically just wanted to keep his prayer line going on the internet. He was in his late 80s, but he knew the internet. You know, that's a loving human being who was loved. And the woman that was very, very poor, oh my God. I mean, I had to go see her again just because I had to figure this one out. She lived on a mattress in a one room with her grandson living in the mattress next to her. She was in horrible physical pain, and she was so full of joy. And it was because she had loved her children and her grandchildren so much, and she loved the people in the homeless shelter so much, that even while I'm there, somebody says, you know, here's some soup. You know, I made this lunch for you. And she says, see, all my needs are provided for, because she loved and was loved. You have to have both there. Mm-hmm. If we were all wanting a society like that, instead of a society where we say who's got how much money and how many billionaires are there in the world, but some of those billionaires are great. I researched a lot of them. Some of them are sociopaths, to be quite honest. So, yes. You know, but yes. We've got to stop saying that's the measure of success. How much stuff do you have? We have to start saying, how many people have you helped? How many people do you love?
Yes.
What kind of a loving person are you? And that's what the Conscious Love, Reach for Conscious Love program is. What does it mean to be loving? I mean, I've really dug into that. Too often we confuse love with lust, with codependency, which means, you know, I'm going to love you but not be loved back, with abuse, which means I'm going to be loved but not loved back, with addiction,
absolutely.
All these kinds of things. None of them are love. So if we can understand that and get rid of that, then we're going to be able to attract and have love because we'll know what it is.
I love that idea, and you know, it really resonates with me. How are you going to sort of try and get that in the people that attend your Conscious Love programs? I mean, how easy do you think it is going to be to get people to shift to that? Or are some people going to be perhaps easier than others?
There's a wonderful saying that came from Africa, and it's called, how do you eat an elephant one piece at a time? You know, so it's one person at a time. We're going to accomplish this more by everybody listening that resonates with what I'm saying, finding the 10 people that resonate with what they're saying, and creating that kind of link through social media and link through the internet and link through your show, Lisa, Blog Talk Radio. We are going to get to the tipping point. We only need 10% of the people on the planet to want to change, and we'll tip the rest of the planet. That's what the idea of the tipping point is. We can definitely get there. If we can bring down dictators from entire countries within a blink of an eye, we can shift. I'm absolutely convinced we can shift. And the number one thing is stop equating success with wealth. Number two, get that it's all about long-lasting loving relationships, being loved and loving. And number three, learn what love really is.
Beautiful. I think that in particular, you know, the love, learning what love really is, I see such a lack of that. As I don't know if you know, Lisa, some of the work that I do, I work particularly with abused women. And I've been in an abusive relationship myself. And, you know, that really, I find a lot of people out there perhaps, particularly in these relationships, like you mentioned, we don't know what love is. We don't actually know what pure love actually is. We've forgotten that. We don't get taught it anymore. You know, so just to be able for people to actually understand that.
Well, I've worked with abuse myself, and I'll speak from the abused woman's perspective, and I've kind of already mentioned this, or men can be abused. When we know how to love, but we don't understand we need to be loved, we can become more subject to abuse. I've experienced a lot of abuse in my life. And I always thought that the answer was to say, I'll just love more. I'll just love more. Well, too often that love was enabling other people to not love me back. And so I have a saying I've used for 5 years
now.
Love expands love. Love is consciousness. Love is knowing how to get people to wake up to the sense of connection that we all have to ourselves, to each other, to spirit, to the planet, to other kingdoms in nature. Love awakens us to our interconnection with each other. And so if I'm being abused and I'm just thinking that my passively letting that abuse continue is some way that it's going to change things? No, that's me not loving myself, and that's me not understanding that love has a power and an intelligence to it. And sometimes the power is saying, thou shalt not abuse me anymore, and getting that person to understand why they're being abusive and that is usually abuse is a form of entitlement. There's a favorite book I have from a man that works with men who abuse called Why Does He Do That? By Lundy Bancroft. And he completely blows the water out of the idea that people abuse because of low self-esteem. No, people abuse because they get a lot of goodies from the abuse. They get free labor. They get a lot of free sex. They get a lot of money.
Oh, God, yeah.
And until those entitlements are taken away, like all those billionaires, the ones that aren't nice, that are, you know, horribly abusing the rest of us on the planet, until those entitlements are taken away, the abuser does not question their belief system that they have a right to abuse. They don't even think they're abusive because they're entitled. They don't think they're narcissistic because they're entitled. And so we must take away out of love. This is an act of powerful love, like they did in Egypt and trying to do in other countries, to say abuse is abuse. It is not love, and we love ourselves, and we love the planet, and we love each other, and you are not entitled to abuse us anymore. That's it.
Yeah.
That's love, expanding love.
And that's powerful, isn't it? Absolutely. Really, really powerful. I mean, that's, gosh, you can imagine those waves of that trickling around the planet. So when it comes to this particular program, which is the Conscious Love Program, what's your plan to get it out there? Is it an online program? Is it something you teach? How do you plan to get this out there and spread the word?
Well, it is online as a series of audio and MP3s that are available. But the way I would, and that's at reachforconsciouslove.com, or you can just go to Dr. Lisa Love and click on the buttons. You'll see it on the front of the Dr. Lisa Love page. How I really want to get it out there is I would love people to want me to come to their city, their state, their province, their country, and help get the word out. I can't do this alone. I need lots of other people to be inspired by the vision, to add to the vision of Reach. I really want to set up, I want to get the funding to set up an online kind of campus, which one of the reasons I say that is I helped America Online in 1994 develop their online campus. I taught over 200 of their teachers how to teach the innovations I learned online. So I would love it to be a place where not just my voice is heard, but lots of amazing voices are heard of how we can have more conscious communication, drawing a lot from the compassionate communication, it used to be called nonviolent communication teachings, conscious unity, which is all those methods that help us have that kind of realization I had in 1989, conscious pleasure, which is going into more depth instead of breadth. You know, in the United States, it's like sample it and 5 seconds later, throw it out. Everything's become junk food. Instead, let's really get the most juice out of that orange. Let's get the most pleasure out of that experience. Let's use all five senses and really go into it. Conscious security is let's learn what it means to have enough for our needs and not our greeds. And more people are joining the Live Simply So People Can Simply Live movement, just like the guy in the I Am movie did. Let's get people inspired by the fact that we need the basics. But once we have loving connection, then we have real security because we have people who care. They're there for us. They have our back when we run into problems or difficulties. And then the Conscious Power Program is about power with instead of power over. Power over is the win-lose dynamic. There have to be some people who win and some lose. Power with is I use my power to help understand what your needs are. And I ask the question, how can I help you get your needs met? Now, the happiest relationships, this is the marriage, family, child counselor in me, the happiest relationships are where both people in the relationship ask the question, how can I help get your needs met? That's what creates synergy, energy, love, connection. How do we help each other get each other's needs met? Instead of this way that so many of us are living on the planet is, I need to be sure that law of attraction even, that I get my needs met, without thinking about the consequences to you. And then, ironically, what that leads to in the end is less and less happiness. You know, the people that have a lot of money that are happy, I studied them, are the people that are huge givers, huge contributors to their families. This is, interestingly enough, they tend to be married to the same person most of their lives. They tend to have the same car for a long time. They tend to live in more middle-class neighborhoods than wealthy neighborhoods. You wouldn't even know they have the money they have, a lot of them, because they don't want the money to get stuff to show off. They want the money to have at least 10 years of savings in the bank so they can be sure that they're able to take care of their family and their friends and their community.
Mm.
They're totally motivated in a different way than what most of the Hollywood movies and Hollywood hype that comes out, which is, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins. Well, you may die with the most toys, but you're not going to die loved, and you're not going to be loving. So in the end, you're going to be miserable and medicated. And I've seen these people, literally, many of them in their homes, miserable. It's not a way to go at the end.
No, I mean, that is, you can't take it with you. You know, at the end of the day, very, very simply there. Gosh. So, you know, I love this idea. And like you said, we need to get it out there. You can't do this on your own. This is going to take people to start that ripple effect and sort of spread it out around the place. So, you know, any listeners or anybody we've got here on the show today, if this is absolutely something that resonates with you, you know, get in touch with Lisa. And I think this is just such a fabulous, not idea, I just think this is a great thing. We can all take responsibility for this, and we can all do our bit of change, whether it's getting Lisa in to, you know, talk on your show, or like she said, come and do a workshop or something like that, because we need to support you, I believe, here. We need to actually support you in actually spreading this word of love and getting it out there. And, you know, like you said, it's just a tipping point. Because we're at the wrong tipping point at the moment. I think things are about to fall over. So we need to pull that back a little bit and get some of these ideas and some of this love actually out there. I mean, Lisa, tell us more. I'm loving talking to you at the moment. Tell us more about these week's programs. Tell us anything which you just would like to share.
Well, I'll draw for a moment on Compassionate Communication, which is the Reach for Conscious Communication program. And I heard about Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication. He's been doing this for a long time. A lot of people want him to get the Nobel Peace Prize. I think he should. But I've been training more deeply in it. And it's interesting because he even defines violent communication as me caving in and not having my needs met for the sake of meeting yours. You know, and abused women, you know, I used to be an abused woman. We tend to do that ourselves. And so understanding instead, first of all, what are our needs? What are our real needs? And what really does create happiness, drawing from a lot of the research that I've already mentioned in the happiness and well-being movements that are going on. You know, the country of Bhutan has decided to no longer use gross national product as a measure of success. They're trying something called gross national happiness. In other words, they're making all the decisions based upon, will it lead to greater happiness of the greatest amount of people in the country? And if not, we don't want to do it. And so there's an innovative idea. I'm a tremendously driven by idea person, and I have innovated a lot of things in my life. And so I am always interested in people on the cutting edge, and I have actually simplified my life down a great deal. I live very simply, and I could just live my life with, just being a global mobile person, going and help spreading the news to people and creating those loving connections and getting this message out and meeting all the like-minded and like-hearted people who know that we can tip this planet in the right direction. So compassionate communication is very important, though, because if we approach this as if we're the good people and they're the bad people, we're not listening to the needs that people have. So it's an interesting training in how to identify your needs, identify my needs, but then get you to understand that the best way to get your needs met is to help you get my needs met, and vice versa. That way, so what we want to do is we want to be in that creative, dynamic, loving space where we can stay in conversation and communication long enough to say, what is the innovative solution that will help us all get our needs met here? I'm not talking greeds, et cetera. They say in that particular training that there are strategies that we all use to get needs met, but a lot of the strategies in the end don't work. So we need to do this in a nonviolent, compassionate way, but in an urgent way. And that's one particular system that I strongly support that I'm learning more and more, that people could train themselves in. In fact, there's something called the NVCAcademy.com. I'll be happy to promote it. I was going to set up an affiliate program. I guess I should, so that I would get part of the resistance. I don't have that in place yet. But anyway, NVCAcademy.com. They're giving it away for like 15 American dollars. That is so cheap. You know, you can go in there a month and listen to programs. You can download all the programs for 25 U.S. dollars a month. I mean, that is crazy. There's like 150 audio video programs in there. It's amazing training, so I'll go ahead and promote that. That's one way. Another way is I'm so passionate about people understanding some of my philosophy, what love is and isn't, because 90%, maybe it's too high, but I think it isn't, 90% of what we call love isn't. You know, I watch movies and I listen to songs and the stuff I used to listen to when I was a kid, and I just think, oh, my God, no wonder I had trouble getting loved. None of that was love. Love hurts. Believe me, if any of you are feeling hurt by a love relationship, know this. It is not love that is hurting you. It is I-L-L, ill, or I lack love. It is the lack of love that is hurting you. Another myth I like to blow, the idea that we fall in and out of love. Absolutely not true. What usually happens, I was a Match.com dating advisor for a while, so I would deal with these kinds of questions a lot, is the infatuation dies. And the chemicals associated with the brain of that initial high start to die off. And suddenly you start to see the other person clearly for who they are. Now, love is consciousness. Love is 20/20 vision. It is not blind. And I start to see you and I go, oh, you mean you may have some financial issues? Oh, you mean your kids may not be the most ideal? Oh, you mean you have this little habit pattern over here? Oh, you have this little problem over there? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm out of love with you. Excuse me, you were never in love with that person. You were in love with a fantasy of who you thought that person was because you thought that they would meet your needs. And when you realize they didn't, and when you see them for who they really are, that is the moment to love that person. You can love that person and love yourself and meet their needs and meet your needs. But what too many of us do, because we're in the win-lose consciousness and the disposable consciousness, we go, oh, you have problems. Well, there must be a bigger, better deal around the corner. Sorry, I'm out of love with you next, and I get to go on my next new dopamine infatuation high. You know, that will be gone again in about 6 months. No wonder the average relationship in this country, in the United States at least, is only lasting 5 years. And yet people are getting more and more medicated, unhappy. It's a recipe that isn't, it's a strategy that isn't working. And we've got to wake up to that.
I mean, that so resonates with me. I think, you know, absolutely, in some of my relationships, it's that's exactly how it is. And then the excitement and everything drifts away, and all of a sudden, you know, this person's changed. It's not making me happy. I'm not getting what I want. And then I automatically sort of think, okay, let's throw him in the trash or whatever and go on to find the right person. So we've talked a little bit about what love isn't. What about what love is?
I have a pretty radical definition, and when I first used to use this word that I'm about to say, when my book Beyond the Secret came out, because I said there's a greater law than the law of attraction. First of all, the law of love, which involves the law of sacrifice, and that word sacrifice had so many people so upset when I was on the radio, etc. So I define sacrifice in a very particular way: joyful giving. It's where I can't imagine not giving that to you, because the consequences of me not giving it, I can't even imagine that. You know, it's just my natural, spontaneous, you know, what a mother does for a child, what a father does for a child, what we do for the people we really care about. We can't imagine not doing that. And in fact, there's more and more research going on to show that humans, basically by nature, are compassionate beings, not competitive beings. We get more of a dopamine high from random acts of kindness. In some cases, they've researched it, than we do from cocaine. And so what is happening is we've been like taught by the sociopaths or the psychopaths or whoever they are that somehow or another human nature is competitive and dysfunctional. By the way, psychopaths and sociopaths, they've done brain research. You can tell I've done a lot of gathering information on this. And psychopaths have a very inhibited ability to process empathy in the brain. I mean, they literally have taken brain scans of numerous psychopaths, serial killers, and they've discovered that they all have similar areas in the brain that aren't functioning well anymore. And one of the reasons for this can be too high of a level of testosterone. Sorry, guys, but that's part of what the research is finding. Too much testosterone means you may have an inhibited ability to process oxytocin, which is the bonding and empathy chemical. You know, go look at some of the TED Talks on this, TED TED Talks. You can do Google, you can Google that or whatever, TED Talks on empathy, and you'll start to see some of what I'm talking about here. And so one of the things that we've got to do, doesn't mean, you know, all the guys with high testosterone, it's like, oh, horrible thing. But we have to realize that acts of compassion and kindness are what we're basically about as human beings. And the few people out there who have tried to persuade us that that's not who we are wrong, plain and simple. So stop buying into that belief system. Why do they want us to do that? Why do abusers abuse? Because they feel entitled. Why? Because they get a lot of goodies. Why did they get a lot of goodies? Because the rest of us let them. Why are 7 billion people allowing 1,446 people to do this? What is that about? Every single billionaire, in my opinion, is responsible for 1 billion people on the planet, or we should take their money away. Let them go earn that money. Let them have free enterprise and go get it. But if they're not circulating it back out to the public, it means they don't feel the connection in their head and in their hearts. They don't have conscious unity. They don't have conscious love. And why are the rest of us putting up with it? Now, that's the better question than why do they have it? Why do we allow it? Let's not do it anymore. Let's change the dynamic of what it means to be a success. Let's change our understanding of what we're really like as human beings, and let's be who we are as human beings, which is basically compassionate, empathetic, kind, caring, wanting to love and be connected. That is essentially who we are.
You know, just thinking what you were saying there about we do, we accept it. It's like that's the way it is. And when you look at a lot of these sort of Forbes magazines, they're filled with the 100 most wealthy people in the world. You know, how amazing would it be if it was like the 100 more happy people in the world? Well, we could learn from people like that and spread it out even more. But, you know, you're so right. We've just become accustomed to it. We've just accepted it. That's it.
Exactly.
And we've used wealth as our benchmark.
It's interesting because in the forward to the recent edition of my Beyond the Secret book, well, the publisher's put it out 3 times now because it's getting so successful, I basically quote, I think his name is Victor Lebeau, who was an economist in the 1950s, and he goes so far, I don't have the quote in front of me at the moment, but he goes so far as to say that it is our spiritual purpose to consume and to have extensive consumption and rapid consumption and to have things break quickly and to throw things out quickly. And this is the marketing ethic and the economic ethic. There's a great documentary as well called The 1% done by Jamie Johnson, the heir of the Johnson & Johnson fortune. And, you know, he himself is looking at, he's an heir to this wealth, challenging, you know, what are we doing? You know, with this kind of ethic that somehow or another we're better than everybody else, or we deserve this money because we were smarter, or we worked harder. Worked harder? What? I mean, I know people that work 16, 18 hours a day. I was married, my first marriage, I was married to somebody who was wealthy. And if I had stayed in that marriage, I would have never wanted for money ever again in my life. And that's where I started to get exposed to some of the stuff I didn't like. There's stuff I do like, but stuff I didn't like. And one of the things that just made me nuts was this idea that somehow or another they deserved it or worked harder or were more intelligent, because I went, I've met lots of people who are more intelligent than a lot of you. You guys are taking vacations and partying here and going there. I know, you know, because I had also worked with people that were homeless and abused as a marriage, family, child counselor, gang kids. And so I'm like, I know lots of people who work way harder than any of you do. You know, what basically is the difference is you guys are lucky. Or you guys have the brilliance, but if you're not circulating it in a way where other people are benefiting by it, and I don't mean just 10% tithing. I did research on that too. 10% tithing, who cares? who cares if I've got $20 billion and, you know, what is that, 10% and I live off the rest myself? Who cares? You don't need $19 billion for yourself. That's just called selfishness. So, you know, I think it should be the opposite. And, in fact, I forget the wealthy person who did that. And he actually said you give away 90% of your wealth and you keep 10% of it. And I went, now that person has it right. Or the Andrew Carnegie, the famous philanthropist here in the United States, he has a little book that I read in my research called The Gospel of Wealth, teeny tiny little book. And he said that if the wealthy haven't given away almost all of their wealth, leaving a little bit, not a lot, a little bit for their heirs, by the time they die, then estate taxes is the state's rightful condemnation of their lives for not having used their money in service to others. Now, fortunately, Bill Gates and Melinda Gates are excellent examples of somebody living according to the Andrew Carnegie principle. They're doing an awful lot with their money compared to how much money they have. Warren Buffett has finally joined that cause. But we need two things. We need the masses to say, this idea, even the law of attraction people, this idea of happiness means lots of stuff is ridiculous. Happiness means more time for leisure, basic needs met, more time for our kids, more time for our family, more time for relationship, more time to work out relationships, more time for rests, which gives us more time for health, which makes us less likely to eat sugar. I was raised on sugar, which leads to more fat, which leads to more health problems. I mean, we've got it all backwards. I'm so passionate.
Yeah,
my God, you're really getting me passionate
there,
Lisa. It's the opposite. It's the other way around. And if we lived simply so people could simply live, if we said, okay, how much stuff do I really need to be happy? I have radically simplified my life. In fact, there's a great website. It's called the Ecological Footprint, where you can go on and you can see, depending on how you live right now, how many planets we would need for you to be able to live that way. I'll share. I live in a two-bedroom, two-bath place. When my son is with me, I live according to the Ecological Footprint. When my son is not with me, I need two planets for everybody to live like me. I live in a very simple life. So when we look at people who are living in 17,000 square foot homes, how many planets are they consuming? You know, how much of the resources of this planet are they consuming? And it would be okay if we were using it and recycling it and having it be there for the next generation from cradle to cradle, they call it. But too much of it is just use it, throw it out. Or only a tiny few get to enjoy it, and the rest are hungry and starving and don't have health care. And that's why what's that movement? Now my mind is forgetting it. You know, the 10% versus the 90% movements that started here in the country and around the planet were erupting. They've died down a little bit because they've been suppressed. But just because we're underground doesn't mean that our ideas have gone away and doesn't mean that we're still not working for change. The 99%, that was it.
Oh, gosh, I'll have to take that one out as well, actually. Look, Lisa, what can, you know, for people that are listening in now and are going, yes, I want to be a part of this, I want to do something, what can they do, not just with getting involved in your program, but what can they do every day in their life to perhaps change something they're doing or, you know, make a bit of a difference there?
Well, just get some of the messages I've gotten out, like happiness and well-being research is showing, I'm repeating it, long-lasting loving relationships is what really makes us happy. So just start having conversations with people. What are we doing to create that? Do I have that in my life? If you don't have that in your life, is it because you're not loving enough? You're too concerned about your own needs and you're moving into narcissism? If maybe it's the opposite. Maybe you're too codependent. Maybe you're not being loved. Sit down, meditate on being loved. Go to sleep and say, how can I be loved more? Those are some practical things. Another practical thing, I already mentioned the NVC Academy. Go on. $15 American, I'm sure, is pretty cheap for Australians, too. My God. The amount of training and things you'll learn there will just blow your mind. Another thing you can do is go around your home. I had to do this. And say, how much of this stuff do I really enjoy? This is the Conscious Pleasure Program. My mother had a policy. If you haven't used it in 5 years, and actually I've shortened that to maybe a couple years, if you haven't used that in 2 years, or it doesn't give you tremendous pleasure when you see it, then let it go. It's creating dead space in your consciousness, your world. When you go shopping, I almost never go shopping anymore. It's really interesting because I was with somebody who does a lot of shopping, and I'm like, wow, my needs have gotten so simple. Why do I really need to shop for that? Who's really benefiting from that? You know, am I really going to wear those clothes that much? How much do they really cost? You know, if I spend that money, how can I not use that in something that will give me even more pleasure, more joy, longer? You know, I struggle with food. I was raised on sugar, so I'm learning how to try and eat more fruits and vegetables and get my body back into good shape. But, you know, so those are some real practical steps that that I'm encouraging. You know, finding ways to grow our own food, finding ways to start organic farmer community gardens. They're even doing this in places like New York, so big cities, they're doing it. LA, they're finding ways to do it, Los Angeles. So find ways that maybe you can start to have collective gardening so you have control of your food. Get very conscious about water. Oh, if there's one thing, water is going to be the new oil. In fact, they're already competing to buy up water resources, and a lot of the major corporations have already done this. There was some, I think it was in Bolivia, the huge revolt, Ecuador, Bolivia, because of them trying to own the water. So they would take what was free and sell it back to us in plastic bottles, by the way, which are made out of oil, and for the most part are creating horrible consequences around the planet. And so we think we've got pure water, but we don't necessarily. And yet those same companies are buying Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, et cetera, because I know they did this in Maine in the United States. They're getting rights to the groundwater. So it's like, oh, my God, they're like owning the water, owning the resources. So get very aware of what some of these corporations are doing in terms of them trying to, not only that, they're trying to own rain. They're trying to own rain. So get aware. Get aware of what some of these corporations are really up to as they're trying. They're trying to monetize and own DNA now that they've cracked the Human Genome Project. I mean, it's insane.
It's crazy.
This is sociopathic, psychopathic behavior, and it's time that we all started to become aware of it and said, no, and who are these people? And instead of idolizing them like, well, they've got lots of money, so they must be really great. You know, I see some of these magazines. I'm near Hollywood. I'm near L.A., Los Angeles. So I live in a very small town where people are very friendly and wonderful. But I'm 2 hours away from Los Angeles, and when I go get my nails done and stuff, I look at some of those magazines, and I think, oh, my God. You know, even these people with all this money, you know, their relationships are ending, they're unhappy, they're killing themselves, they're drugging themselves. I just put those magazines down and go, no, I'm not going to buy into that lifestyle. I'm not going to buy into that myth. That's what the sociopaths and the psychopaths that want us to believe that, you know, this is the way we should live our lives in terms of idolized wealth and consumption. No more. That's what Victor Lebeau in 1955, the economist I mentioned early, was trying to get us to all buy into, and most of us have. Don't do it anymore. Don't say wonderful things about people that live like that. Just say, wow, that's kind of sad.
Even.
Obviously, they don't know what real happiness is about. Go ahead.
Exactly. And you know what? In idolizing people like that and to put them up on that pedestal, it usually has the feeling that it makes us individually feel less than or bad or there's something wrong with us because we think these people are better or more intelligent in some way, you know, which simply isn't true.
Exactly. Now, what I want to be real careful about, because this would, and actually, according to nonviolent communication, compassionate communication, I shouldn't be using those words psychopath and sociopath. Maybe look for better words that don't stimulate, you know, that kind of anti-image. But what we need to understand is that those people in general are doing that because of decades, you know, Victor Lebeau, 1955, so what is that? That's almost 60 years, decades, almost 70 years of trying to indoctrinate people, and this is how to live. So those people are living according to how they believe they should live. So somehow or another, we've got to wake them up, just like the guy that did the I Am documentary. We've got to wake, you can find it on Amazon Prime, so or on Amazon. So we need to wake them up and say, you know what? this is a form of mental insanity. And we understand that you thought that this was the way to go and the way to be, but we've evolved in our consciousness now. We're understanding what helps us really feel a lot better as human beings, and it's being connected. It's loving one another. It's learning how to be loved. It's taking care of things. It's taking care of our planet and world. And you know what? They actually do feel better. In fact, even Jim Carrey, the actor, has gone and simplified his life as well. I mean, we're genuinely a lot. I'm a lot happier than I was when I had lots of money and I felt like I was in a gilded cage and cut off and lonely. There was nothing worse than that, knowing that you have all the resources to supposedly make yourself happy, but you're miserable.
Mm.
So that's...
Oh, gosh, yes. So,
don't want to condemn, but we want to enlighten and uplift. And we want them to feel encouraged to give of their resources, not defended or protected, because then they won't do it. We want them to feel encouraged by buying into the new paradigm and having them understand this is going to make you feel a lot better as a human being as well.
Beautiful. Now, Lisa, we're running out of time. We've only got a sort of 4 minutes left. So have you got any last words, anything you want to say about your programs? Obviously, if you can just let us know where we can get hold of you. You've got 4 minutes.
Well, my website is drlisalove.com. You can spell out Dr. DrLisaLove.com, or you can abbreviate it, DrLisaLove.com. The Reach for Conscious Love program has a separate page called Reach for Conscious Love. Reach for Conscious Vision has its separate page. But the best way to learn about and access the programs is by going to Dr. Lisa Love. But for those of you that have listened, the main thing when you go there is you're going to basically see me. I don't want it to be just me. At some point, I want it to be like the NVC Academy, where you go in and you have all kinds of amazing material from the leading minds and lights. That's what I did with the Soul to Spirit website when I did that from 2000 to 2005. I don't want everybody and anybody in there. I'm going to be very selective. And then from there, I want a community of people that will be inspired by that and spread the word. So I'm looking for funding to help me set that up. I'm looking for anybody that's got amazing web programming skills to help me set that up, you know, so that we can make it a community effort instead of just a Dr. Lisa Love effort, which is what it looks like when you go to my website at the moment. But you got to start somewhere.
Love that idea. There must be so many experts out there that you can just use your skill, your talents that you've got to actually really help and make a difference here and spread that beautiful, warm, loving consciousness around and help us actually reach that tipping point. So, Lisa, absolute pleasure to have you on today. I'd love to have you on the show today. Again, you're so interesting. Love the work that you're doing there. And it's been an absolute pleasure for us to spend this hour with you today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, and it's a real pleasure. And as I mentioned, I'll say it publicly to everybody, I really want a copy of the show so that I can put it up on my website. And also, Lisa, you are the first person that's really dug in to wanting to know in more detail about this stuff. And so my hat off to you, because it really reflects the quality and level of your own consciousness and your own great ability to serve.
Oh, thank you so much. I like to know everything. Especially when it's something I can feel your passion, and I can actually feel it enlightening my passion. And I'm a big believer there's no such thing as coincidence. There's a reason that we were meant to connect before this show today. Absolutely. So thank you again. Before they cut us off, I will be in touch, and thank you so much. Love you loads, and take care, and thank you.
Thank you. You have a great day, and I'll have a great evening. Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Fabulous. What a great, great show with Dr. Lisa Love there. So if you're still listening there, please look at those things that you could do. You know, have a look. Can you perhaps reach out to somebody today? Can you basically take a bin bag and walk around your house? I know that's something that I regularly do. You need that stuff. Now, have you used it? Get rid of, you know, some of those things that you've got there, and maybe play back the call today, have a think about what you could do. And also perhaps you can help Lisa and help actually spread this message further. Get hold of Lisa, or if not, you can always email me. And thank you so much for listening to today's show. Have a great afternoon and take care.